Hey.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Welcome to Through Thick and Thin, the Ultimate Girlfriends Podcast. My name is Ashley.
And my name is Edwin.
Okay, so if you didn't notice, I didn't take a pause between that. I said Through Thick and Thin, the Ultimate Girlfriends Podcast, not Through Thick and Thin. The
Cool.
Ultimate Girlfriends Podcast. And that's because I changed the name on iTunes so that if for some reason someone was looking for a girlfriends podcast, they would see it. And because Twitter allows for longer names now,
True.
I threw all of that in, except for the cast part didn't fit. So it's the Ultimate Girlfriends Pod. But you get the point.
Well played.
Yes. Yes. So I see you're not at Bourbon Ball tonight.
Okay. All right.
What?
Well, no, because I'm not in DC. That's where it is, right?
Okay.
And also, obviously.
Yeah. Well, listen, here's my thing. I had this thought earlier today because it is time now for Bourbon Ball to be underway or whatever, and
When we're recording
that
this.
yes, as we're recording this, and because yeah, so it's Bourbon Ball time right now for DC, and because of all the stuff that popped off on Thursday night into Friday, and into the weekend, a lot of people don't want to go or didn't want to go anymore, so they're not going. My thought is, yeah, I would have probably just rolled the wave of like the people I was going with, but listen, tickets were already paid for and they're non-refundable because you paid for non-refundable tickets. Let's just go get these drinks anyway. They there. And if not a lot of people are there, I mean, that's more drinks. Like, the drinks are still gonna be there and the drinks are still unlimited. And if the person that everyone's worried about is not there, nor would I have interacted with that person anyway. You get what I'm saying? Like, the check already cleared. Let's go get these drinks.
Okay.
Well, I just stay there all night. But I'm just saying, like, because I get it, but a lot of people that like knew the like allegations and these rumors and stuff knew of all this stuff and still attended these events anyway. So now that everybody knows, I'm supposed to feel like I can't go, but the $50 ticket was already paid for. The drinks are still there. So that's just me, my thought that just occurred like a few seconds ago, because apparently there's like 20 people at the event tonight, and people are like, so did they go just to like go and tell the timeline? And I'm thinking people probably went for a variety of reasons. You probably will have some people that went just to say they went, just to be that like on the ground reporter and like tweet these pictures back for their timeline so they could get a few retweets, because they only have like a probably like 89 followers to begin with. Or you have some people that are like, look, I already bought this outfit. I already bought this ticket. I'm still gonna go anyway. I don't see the problem in that. Listen, I feel like more people need to pay attention to what happens on the 15th and the last day of the month, or the 6th and the 21st, or whenever your paycheck hits. That's what should like impact the things you do in your life. You have to first think, will this affect my paycheck? If the answer is no, then you shouldn't feel no guilt. And that line of thought, my friends, is sponsored by Almond Breeze and Patron.
All right. Cool. So, girlfriend. Episode 13.
Oh, yeah, sure. All right. Okay, let's get into it. Yes, so in February 5th of 2001 is when this episode titled They Gotta Have It aired. This episode of Girlfriends is summarized on Google as Joan is puzzled by her boyfriend Sean's lack of interest in sex, and Yvonne reveals a secret about William's anatomy. If you want to dig into Wikipedia, type, their summary, which is a little more in depth than that, basically it says Joan grows impatient with Sean, who refuses to kiss or touch her. After discussing a number of possible explanations with her friends, she pushes Sean for the reason behind his cold behavior. Joan is taken aback when he confesses to being a sex addict. Meanwhile, Tony annoys Greg with her refusal to make a commitment to him, and Yvonne angers William by sharing a few too many intimate details about her love life with Maya. This episode was directed by Henry Chan. We haven't talked about Henry Chan before because Henry Chan has not directed an episode of Girlfriends prior to this. However, he's directed a lot of shows. Most recently, Return of the Mac, which is a television show, Zoe Ever After, Fresh Off the Boat, A to Z, which was actually a really great show that got canceled on NBC, Let's Stay Together, that was on BET, 10 Things I Hate About You, the TV show, Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23, King of Queens, Kiki and Jamal, who's heard of that? Who knows? The Sweet Life of Zach and Cody, The Parker, Soul Food, Sister Sister, For Your Love, Brothers Garcia, Different World, Living Single, etc., etc. He is working. Yeah. Let's see, back in February 5th, 2001, there was like a really big snowstorm. Huh?
Want to hear a little fun fact about the director?
Go for it.
Apparently, among his movie credits is, and if you have Wikipedia, you might want to pull this up because I don't have the synopsis in front of me. But he directed a little movie by the name of Gas. And this was cool because it actually starred two people that those that are fans of Girlfriends should be familiar with.
Yeah.
Both of the men who played the character.
The same character.
So I thought that was cool. Could you read the synopsis for this movie?
Okay, no, I didn't. Go for it, since you're interrupting my section.
No, I was asking you to look up.
I'm messing with you. Just go for it.
Go for what?
Okay, well, I'll read it. I thought you had it up.
No, I was saying I didn't.
Okay. I'm going to now read the plot of Gas, the 2004 film. Upon returning to Los Angeles to attend his father's funeral, Damon, played by Flex Alexander, soon learns that in order to claim his share of the family inheritance, he must work alongside his brother, Mookie, played by Khalil Kane, a former drug dealer who had previously cost Damon a college scholarship, probably basketball, in keeping the family's long-running gas station in business for at least 1 year. So they're Darnell to the fullest. As the siblings repeatedly butt heads over matters, both great and small, they soon come to realize that it takes more than money to hold a family together. J.B. Smoove was also in this movie.
Yes.
And Tyson Beckford. And yes. Joe Marie Payton, a.k.a. Harriet Winslow. I feel like we need to watch this movie and then, do a mini episode on it.
I'm glad you think that.
But don't you ever interrupt my section again.
Wow.
I'm kidding.
Interesting. Are you?
Yeah, I wouldn't have said I was kidding if I wasn't.
All right. Cool, cool.
So, yes, February 5th, 2001, there was a snowstorm. It was a week after the Ravens won the Super Bowl, the 34th Super Bowl. No, I just made that number up. It was actually the 35th Super Bowl. They played, the Giants. Yes. 34-7 was the score. the year Lewis before.
Ray Lewis was the MVP?
Yes, a year after he beat his murder charge. Look at how God works.
Well, I think it was a tampering charge. I don't know if he was arrested for actually committing murder.
Well, the murder trial.
Yeah.
Happened a lot later. But, yeah, the whole murder incident, though, happened at the Super Bowl party the year before in Atlanta. January 31st, 2000. So the following year after he dealt with that, he won the Super Bowl. So the Backstreet Boys sang the national anthem at that year Super Bowl, the 35th, not the Ray Lewis Super Bowl, even though they're both, I guess, the Ray Lewis Super Bowl. Anywho, don't kill people in white suits, allegedly.
I mean, you could kind of break that up into don't kill people and also don't wear white suits, but sure.
No, yeah. Speaking of white suits, I have nothing. But yeah, so this episode didn't really see any new characters. We see Chuma Galt is back as Greg again. Sean Ellis is played by Dondre Whitfield again. CC Michaela plays Yvonne again. And we have the regular cast. There is no Davis sighting on this episode. Yep. That's pretty much it. The people that worked on this episode have worked on previous episodes. One day, I'll get into some of these other folks that that worked on the show, but that's not today. So let's get into the actual show.
Let's do it. The episode opens with Joan's office. Well, Joan's place of employment, I should say. William and Yvonne are walking in. Things are going well. They're still going strong. And they're going to part ways. And William is kind of cornered into doing a public display of affection, which isn't necessarily up his alley. So he gives Yvonne a nice peck. And he goes on to his office. She walks over to Maya. And they exchange their, you know, black woman Christian greetings, talking about he may not come when you want him, but he'll be there right on time. And various other idioms and cliches. And Yvonne, I think, asked for aspirin, if I'm not mistaken. And Maya was curious, like, oh, you know, what's hurting?
Said, oh, yeah, well, she did ask for aspirin.
Yeah. And effectively, she was like, well, William put a hurting on me. She's like, oh, really? You put it down like that? She's like, girl, yes. Punchline was that he was bringing the heat and he was big boned, as Bernie Mac might say, RIP to the Mac man. And Maya was shocked and taken aback by this revelation. And Yvonne was confident in telling her, yeah, it's true. However big you think it is, double up. So she's like, wow, shout out to him. So of course, what does Maya do? She immediately tells Joan, right, as soon as she can. Goes into her office and lets her know of William's endowment. And now they're both shocked by this revelation. Cut to Joan's apartment. She's enjoying a nice, relaxing evening at home with her beau, Sean. And things are going pretty well. They're playing a little game, a get-to-know-you exercise where you write down something on a sheet of paper in response to a question. I think one of the ones they used was, what was a movie that you love, but everyone else hates or you're ashamed to admit you love, something to that effect. And I think Sean's answer was The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, yes, which I've never seen.
Right.
And John's answer was Booty Call, which I have seen. Great movie.
What are yours? What's your answer to that?
Movie that I'm I can't really think of anything that I'll be ashamed to admit I like. I could say, like, there's movies, I could say movies like I've cried in that don't make sense to cry in, maybe.
Okay.
I told you about that, right?
Nope.
I cried the first time I saw Meteor Man.
Nope. How old were you?
Like 6 or 7.
Okay.
Remember Meteor Man came out. But all that to say, like, I'm pretty sure that's the only movie I've ever cried in. But anyway, if I had to pick up a movie, I don't know, Spice World? Maybe, I don't know.
Have you seen Spice World?
Yeah, my sister was a huge Spice World fan. Oh, yeah,
we've had that conversation, never mind.
Yeah, my mom dragged us to the Orange Park Mall 24, AMC 24.
Such a great woman.
Yes, true. I don't know if that would be the primary thing I would, you know, use to say that, but agree. Do you have a movie that comes to mind?
A movie I'm embarrassed to say I like?
Sure.
Well, I'm not really embarrassed. So, I got nothing. I would say Dinner for Schmucks, but I'm not embarrassed by liking that movie.
Okay. I've heard some interesting takes on that movie. You have a lot of secondhand embarrassment just for what happens in the movie.
Yes.
But that's three things about it. Review. Back to the episode. They're playing this game, and you know, they're sitting on the floor in front of the couch. I think a fire is going, a very romantic setting. And Joan is like, all right, well, things are going well. So, you know, let's see if I can give him an opening, if he'll take it, you know, spice things up a little bit. And I think either she leaned in for a kiss or gave him a signal to perhaps lean in for a kiss. And she leans in for a kiss that she would expect on the lips. And he hits her with the affectionate but far less passionate forehead kiss, which for anybody that's seen The Best Man is a controversial move in and of itself. But in this instance, it's a very platonic move to not escalate things from a physical passion standpoint. So she's a little confused, thinking maybe he missed the signal. So she's going to try again. When they stand up, he's getting ready to head out. She leans in again, and he basically like gives her a nice double shoulder pat, like pats the outside of her arms, like, all right, well, this was nice. And he's going to head out. So that was a little bit off-putting for her because she assumed that they're feeling each other, attracted to each other physically. She has a 3-month rule, but she can at least still, you know, fool around a little bit, high school style. So now, cut to...
Okay. If you didn't know what was going on, what would you have assumed?
Well, it's kind of tough because when I was watching the episode, I vaguely remember seeing it the first time long ago.
Oh, so you kind of remembered that.
Yeah, but if I had to guess, like, if somebody just gave me those set of facts and I had to guess what the outcome or result was, I'd say maybe it's something like a physical thing. Like, maybe he has, like, a communicable disease, maybe, or maybe some type of trauma, or maybe, you know, something kind of along the same lines of what ultimately ended up being the root cause, but probably not what Joan's friends immediately jumped to.
Okay.
What about you?
I would have figured maybe like religious purposes or something.
Okay. And I guess given how they met, I didn't have anything to build that off of, but sure, that's reasonable. Because even that came up too, so. Okay. So the next scene takes place back at the office. Joan and Maya are about to go to lunch. William catches them on the way out, and I think he asked him to pick him something up because he was stuck at the office working on the Big Johnson case.
Of course.
So of course, they're chuckling about that. And he was saying he doesn't see what's so funny. I think he said something along the lines of the briefs are very tight. So just keeping unknowingly piling on to this running joke they have now. And I think they made a reference to his dictation. So it was like
long dictation.
His long dictation, yes. And so they said, how would you know about my, what did Yvonne tell you? And then they just
But
give them a little hard time and go about on their merry way.
What are your thoughts about sharing details like that?
Dang, you beat me to it. I was going to save that question for a little later. But since we're here now, I do think there's a general line, right? Like, you don't need to give the blow-by-blow, no pun intended, for everything that happens in your relationship to your groupie or whatever, right? I think from a perception standpoint, once you're in a relationship, the stereotype or presumption is that guys are a lot less sharing with their friend group than women. So I think on Twitter sometimes, or someone made a reference to, like, the last thing any man would want to see is his girlfriend's, like, group me chats. Particularly when it comes to just talking about him, because either how he's messed up or what mistake he made or various details of their physical interaction, gotcha. Good or bad. Whereas for guys, in general, and in my experience, typically not, that's not really an expectation. Like, you may mention, you know, if you're going on a trip or if had a particular date that went well or an anniversary coming up, but not necessarily like, you know, what she wore, like, to this event or this evening, something like that. So, and I've actually had that be a thing in past relationships where I felt like there was some oversharing, just because from a personality standpoint, I consider myself a relatively private person. So, with that in mind, it's probably my line's probably a little shorter than most people's. Whereas I'm pretty protective of the person I'm in a relationship with as far as what I share with my friends. So I used to just assume that I'd be reciprocated, which, of course, you kind of have to communicate those things to be really able to expect that of someone else. And so, like, it would be something where if I would tell somebody or the person I was dating, like, you know, a childhood experience where, like, a car accident or something like that, where it was like it impacted me for a period of time afterwards. And then maybe, like, a couple months later, a week later, you know, in a environment with their friends, maybe a reference comes up that ties to that, and they're like, oh, that's just like so-and-so, that happened to you. And I hadn't told it to them, so obviously the only way it came up is if the person I was involved with told their friend. So just things like that. Nothing severe, but just more like a mild annoyance in that case. But then you would just project that over the relationship, like, okay, well, if I can't really trust, you know, keeping my confidence for something like this, then if it was to get to a point in a relationship where we have serious, you know, items, then would I be able to expect, you know, a person to keep my confidence in that regard? So I think it's something you kind of want to talk about and feel out. And I think it's one of those things where you have to figure it out for the two people involved in a relationship.
Okay.
What about you?
I don't share nothing. So there's that. Keep going.
Cool. All right, they've gone to lunch, and so then we will cut to, actually at lunch, if I'm not mistaken, where the core four are all hanging out at Davis's restaurant, and they're discussing the various events that are going on. Tony is calling catering companies, trying to run down Greg, who you might recall from our last episode was at the art gallery as a bartender. So she's calling the catering company to get in touch with him because, as you may remember, his phone was disconnected. She's trying to find a way to get back in touch with him because she wants that old thing back. Maya is confused. She's trying to figure out why Tony's going through all this trouble for somebody that she clearly wouldn't have a future with. And Lynn makes a very humorous series of rhymes about, let's see, not... he's too broke to wed, but not too broke to bed. Another one.
Too broke to something stay, about too broke to play, stay. And then something about stuck, but not too broke.
Yeah,
to...
that's the last one. Yeah. too broke to be stuck with, but not. And she was about to finish, and Joan stopped her. So that was hilarious. Lynn got a lot of jokes in this episode. Like, she was very, like, quick with it. Like, they use her very well, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think this was a good episode for her as well.
Yeah. Tony's on that hunt, and Maya and Joan had finished talking about William's situation. And then Joan is trying to figure out what to do about Sean. This comes up because Tony, in a decent friend move, and I don't know if this is something you've ever experienced with your friends or seen within your friends, Tony bought Joan lingerie to use with Sean. Is that a thing, or was that just kind of...
I remember when we were 14 or 15, Tania bought me and Brittany thongs, and we were like, we're in high school. Like, why did you do this? That is my only time of knowing of, like, friends buying friends underwear. I think one time Janice asked for underwear for her birthday or something, and I might have found some, like, underwear for cheap in, like, just grabbed her some, but it's not like, ooh, this is lingerie for your man. Like, no.
In that
book. Also, I think the whole concept of buying underwear is just kind of like, it's kind of weird. And then,
you mean for somebody else?
Yeah, for someone else. Okay. For like, someone else that you're not with, too. Just like your homegirl. That's odd.
Okay. Fair. And obviously, I don't think that's a guy thing. Like, I've never had the thought cross my mind to grab a pair of briefs for Elliot or, like, grab some boxers for JT. So, yeah, not really a thing. But Tony thought she was being a good friend, so she gave it to Joan to use with Sean. And Joan was saying, well, I'm not going to get any use because he's not going to touch me. And Tony misunderstood, saying, okay, I know you have your 3-month rule, so he can't slide into home, but he can at least, you know, get to second base and see this. So Joan's like, he's not even trying to swing, like, can't even get a kiss. And then she goes on to explain that she can't even get a hug, like, there's just nothing going on. So everyone's like, okay, is there another woman? She's like, don't think so. And then they all three kind of end up with the assumption that he must be gay. Which, for the time period, I guess, was not atypical. And we may talk about this later in the episode, but I don't know if that would be able to fly, you know, in this current time. It's something they just simply arrive at or used as a, maybe a less than positive assumption. But they dropped that as a potential alternative or explanation. Also, the other thing that was thrown out was he might be a Jehovah's Witness. And she said that couldn't be true because he golfed on Saturdays, which... I guess if you're a Jehovah's Witness, typically your day of worship is Saturday. So I guess you couldn't golf after service. I'm not sure. All of that to say, they are at a loss. They can't figure out what's Sean's deal. But they did give her one piece of good advice where she should actually go discuss this with him directly. That would actually be something.
I was surprised that Tony had the maturity to actually say that.
Yeah. Now, there are a few things in this conversation that made me, you know, cock my head to the side. Like, interesting. Given Joan's 3-month rule, and that was initially Sean's comment as to why he was refraining from pushing things along, was maybe there a little bit of hypocrisy as far as, you know, her establishing her ground rules and then him establishing his and not quite getting the same level of respect or consideration? You have any thoughts for that?
Any thoughts about what?
Like, was there maybe some slight hypocrisy given how firm she was about her 3-month rule as a standard and him respecting that, but in effect, he was respecting it too much in her mind?
I mean, if that were just the case, then I don't think that would be a problem. But, you know, there's this thing about articulating thoughts so that people don't just assume. He should have said, you know, this is why, instead of letting her think that, you know, maybe it's something I did or maybe it's me, because there were plenty of opportunities as, like, they should have at least, like, kissed. And he would go for the forehead or go for a hug or go for holding her hand. So, I mean, women never know what's going on in a relationship. Like, they need the guy to say X, Y, and Z. This is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm feeling, so that they know how to feel. Because it's one thing to assume something and then end up in a situationship because you assumed X, Y, and Z, and that's not what it was. So I think Sean should have just said, like, this is why. But even respecting your 3 month rule has nothing to do with, like, a kiss. Or even a hug, because she kind of made it seem like he barely even hugged her. So there needs to be some sort of physical intimacy if in some form or fashion. I imagine they had only met like probably a few weeks before that. So yeah.
Fair. And then one other thing I just wanted to make reference to, not necessarily as a point of discussion, but, and I think this comes up a lot on the social media, particularly Twitter, where this assumption of women's ego, whereas it just bothered Joan to no end that this man was not enthralled with her enough to really push things from a physical standpoint that early on in the relationship. So I just thought that was an interesting perspective and just conversation that they had within that episode, as far as, you know, she felt some type of way that he wasn't trying to pawl over, not to that extent, but that he didn't demonstrate a overt physical passion for at that point in their relationship. So after leaving the restaurant, we cut to Tony's place, where Greg is serving Tony wine, among other things, and they're having their conversation about him being thankful that she found him, despite his phone being disconnected, and that things are going well. He's glad that they were able to reconnect. And Tony makes a joke about being much like a Mountie. She always gets her man. And she says, I'm like a Mountie, so mount me. I thought that was pretty funny. One issue I had with the scene, isn't this his work uniform he's in?
Who?
Greg.
Oh, yeah. I already forgot about him. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I thought maybe you want to be a little more careful with your work clothes, but hey, to each their own.
It's probably a good little rental thing or something you could just dry clean or wash real quick.
Yeah, probably has a few options.
Right.
A few vests, maybe a cummerbund of some sort. So they're chatting, talking, and Greg makes a comment that leads Tony to think he feels as though they're getting back together or something is there. And she's saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. She's not trying to get serious. She just thought they were just having fun, which I thought was very important. And I just want to take this time as an aside to my fellow male listeners. You know, take pride in yourself. You know, you're worth the wait. You know, you have women out here who try to put you under pressure to, you know, just have fun. We're just fooling around. We're just kicking it. No. Don't do that. Make her earn you, King. Okay? Don't be out here selling yourself short. You are worth the wait. You are valuable. And there's women out there who are respecting the
priest. Are you done?
So, I'll just get off that high horse. And I just want to let you all know that it is okay to know your worth and your value. Now, Greg is establishing that he knows his worth. Tony tries to call his bluff, and she did this thing which I've seen done by other women to men and have had done by me, where she was like, you should get out. And he says, okay, and he leaves. And she was like, stop playing, come back. Which to me is always funny. Like, it's a thing where someone assumes that you're not going to call them on their bluff. And when you do, they're scrambling, trying to figure out what to do. So somebody was like, you know, if you don't do this, then we shouldn't talk anymore. And I'll be like, well, okay, I respect that. And then I assume we're not going to talk anymore. Fast forward 30, 45 minutes, and I'm like, oh, so we're just not going to talk? I thought that's what we were doing. So, you know, it was just a very interesting conversation that they had to see that go down where he was willing to walk out on principle. Because Greg wasn't playing. Greg was serious. He was in it for the long haul. So shout out to him.
Cute.
The next scene. Cute. The next scene has Joan eating dinner with Sean. And I think she may have asked him one random question, but then she gets straight to the point. She asks him, is he gay? He's like, what? She says, are you Jehovah's Witness? Like, no. He says, are you on crack? She says, no. So he's just downright confused, trying to figure out what's her angle. She's trying to figure out why he won't kiss her, touch her, demonstrate a physical passion. And he says he's respecting her rule. She says the rule is for sex, but there's a lot of things, there are a lot of stops on that highway before you get to that point. And he says, hey, that's just what he's trying to do. You can't tell her any other reason. And then she gives a very interesting list of alternative reasons. And I thought she gave them in the order of most important to least important. And she said, is it herpes? Is it lockjaw? Is it halitosis? And I was like, that's a very interesting sequence of potential things it could be, because it gets, you know, more treatable, I feel like, from top to bottom. But either way, she was saying, if he's just not attracted to her, they can be friends, which was a lie. But she did say, in a year or two. And then finally, Sean confesses that the reason he's unable to engage with Joan physically, to her satisfaction, is because he is, in fact, a sex addict. So now she's confused, saying, wait, if you're a sex addict, then why would there be an issue with you touching me? And Sean makes it a point to say, women hear what they want to hear. He's saying, I'm trying to tell you, explain to you what's going on, but you're just hearing what you want to hear. And he stands firm and explains that due to his addiction, he can't start on a slippery slope that will have him relapse. So she's very confused. She, of course, brings this to the attention of her friends who are meeting at her house. And they're all confused and trying to figure out, what's that like? What does that mean? And there's a Michael Douglas reference made here about his marriage to Catherine Zeta-Jones, about him being an identified or self-identified sex addict. I think that had to be addressed in their prenup.
You don't remember that?
And Tony tried.
Yeah, that was all over the news back in the day.
Yeah, I don't remember. Was it anyone who said he had throat cancer from
okay. Throat cancer.
Oh, goodness. And sorry, I'm watching a football game at the same time. Dang it. All right. Anyway, they're talking about sex addiction.
All right, Miami.
Tony.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Tony is trying to find a way to integrate Greg into the conversation. So she says, well, Greg won't touch me. Maybe that's why he's a sex addict, which we know, obviously, that's not the case. It's because Greg wants something real. Maya is over it with Tony, saying, you just had to find a way to bring Greg back into this conversation. And Tony says that Greg is her Darnell. And then she tried to make a joke, which obviously wasn't well thought out. She said, except, you know, he's not a baggage handler. And literally, as she said the joke, I was like, almost said it in unison with the character. I was like, but isn't Greg... you know, a bartender. And I think Maya was saying, yeah, but my baggage handler makes more than your bartender. Something to that effect.
It was cute. They both had jokes. So.
Yeah. And Joan is running down a list of symptoms or characteristics of sex addiction. And as she's running down the list, Lynn is like saying, is that really that bad? Well, when you put it like that, hey, I'm not by myself. So she's also indicating that she would be potentially identified clinically as a sex addict. So at that point, Joan is trying to figure out how to make up for what she did wrong. She felt as though she was dismissive to Sean's confession. And Maya was pretty judgmental here. She was like, eh, you know, leave him be. Let him, let his freak flag fly. You know, go on about your life. Lynn, conversely, says she should actually, you know, see things from his perspective. Go to his next meeting. Not only for his benefit, but because Lynn would need a ride to the next meeting. They're going to go to a Sex Addicts Anonymous meeting. But before that, back at Tony's place, Tony rehires Greg because, in her words, she's still thirsty. Greg tells Tony he loves her, and Tony admits that she's the worst, in not so many words. She says she loves Greg, and he says, well, he can't have sex with a client, so she fires him, but she can't fire him because he quit 5 minutes ago. And then they get down to getting down. Next scene is at Sex Addicts Anonymous meeting, where Joan arrives with Lynn in shades, trying poorly to disguise her identity. And Sean is impressed and thankful that Joan decided to make this step to support him in this endeavor. So he decides to open the meeting. So like many of the meetings we've seen on TV for Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, and so on, it opens with the, hi, my name is Sean. Hi, Sean. And I'm a sex addict. And he gives a rundown of his current state of affairs, whereas he's finally had an emotion, or he's had a sexual feeling linked to an emotion, which I guess has eluded him in his previous life up to that point, which has kind of been the root cause of his sex addiction.
Go ahead. When Joan decided that she was going to go to his meeting, I thought to myself, were you going to ask him if you should go? Because we saw then that, you know, like she talked to him beforehand. It wasn't just him scanning through the audience and then he saw that she was there. But I just felt like, you know, when people have addictions and they're doing something to either get over it or get past it or deal with it, that's a personal thing, not just for someone on the sidelines to just be like, oh yeah, well, I'm gonna come with you to your meeting. That might be too personal of a place for you to just be showing up. I just met you. You just found this out about me. But that's what I thought when I watched that. You can continue.
Gotcha. Okay. And Sean is once again on the podium giving his experience, stating he's been abstinent for 1 year and 8 months, which is impressive. Shouts out Joan. Well, he says he's found a woman that has, I guess, been a benefit to his life. And she starts clapping and expects everyone else to start clapping, but no one does. So she's just clapping for herself,
right?
Which is hilarious. And then Sean gives a rundown of the things that his sex addiction has cost him. He lost a marriage, 3 jobs, his dogs, a house. God dang it. Sorry, we had a turnover in the football game. He lost his wife. And by losing the wife, he lost the house and the dogs and all that stuff. And then he drops a bombshell when he said that his addiction has led him to sleep with almost 300 women. And at that point, Joan walks out. Now, in your mind, what would have gone through your head if you were in Joan's shoes and you heard that number?
I mean, that probably would have been something I would have tabled for a personal conversation afterwards. I would have continued to sit there. The room wasn't that big. So I'm not about to embarrass this dude.
Okay. That's very admirable. Our next scene is back at Davis's restaurant. Well, William and Yvonne are having dinner. Oh, shout out to Reggie Hayes. Almost forgot. They're having dinner, and William is venting his frustration about Yvonne's oversharing the details of their relationship. To the point where he decides he's going to cut Yvonne off. He's closing down the candy shop for maybe like 34 seconds before he's like, have you learned your lesson? And she says yes. And they thank God, because both of them weren't trying to do any type of dry period. So they left the restaurant to presumably get right back in the saddle. That was a cute little scene where they established their relationship dynamic and how they still have this very intense physical relationship at that point. Oh, dang. Miami scored again. All right. Cool. Back to the episode.
Your TV is ahead of mine.
Sean. Your TV is ahead of mine.
Oh, okay. Well, that's probably for the best. Sean meets up with Joan, and she said she's going to call him, but we're not sure about that. She basically says he was too honest. It was too much honesty for her to handle. And that she couldn't deal with all of those skeletons in the closet. And Sean kind of calls her out on her own skeletons, where her 3-month rule is rooted in her need for control in a relationship. And I was like, read her, King. Let her know. But they also have, he then projects for women as a whole, they expect their issues to be accepted, but they don't demonstrate reciprocity and are willing to extend the same grace or courtesy when they're presented with a man who has issues that he wants to have considered as well. So I thought that was an interesting point they made in this episode. What were your thoughts there?
On what? I'm sorry.
Sorry.
On women expecting the issues in a relationship to be accepted and considered, but not extending that reciprocity if a man does the same, expressing an issue he has in a relationship.
Women do it all the time. We're supposed to, and to an extent, I guess sometimes men kind of do it like, here's my baggage or whatever. But there should be definitely a level of reciprocity, but to be in a healthy relationship, I think also requires maturity. And some people don't think about that. They just know what they want. They want the end goal. They don't think about all the stuff that it takes to get to said end goal. And end goal is kind of, it varies nowadays. Sometimes people just want to be in a relationship long enough where they can have a baby. Some want to get married. Some just want a long-term partner, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's trash, though, just to assume that, you know, deal with all of my crap, but I don't have to deal with yours.
Okay. Cool. And this scene ends with Joan and Sean kissing, and he asks her beforehand if she could eat an onion, because that helps with his aversion therapy. So that would help things stop at just a kiss, but she says he's tried aversion therapy, but he hasn't tried Joan therapy, so he says he'll try anything. So they kiss, and it ends very nicely. This episode closes with a scene in Tony's bedroom where Greg is there, and Lynn is in the room explaining, well, how she's not a sex addict, where she may be a hedonist, fetishist, perhaps, but not an actual addict. So it was very funny when she tried to explain to them, but also explain to herself how that wouldn't be applicable to her. And then I think she also tried to convince them to let her watch them. And Tony was like, no. And Greg was like, let's hear her out. Which was very funny, obviously, as you would expect a man in a situation to be open to entertaining all possibilities.
Yes.
So that really concludes the show. Was there anything in those last few scenes that you wanted to call back or that you felt I missed?
No, I'm glad Joan came to... I'm glad Joan and Sean resolved that instead of just being like, you know what, 300 people, that's a lot of people, that's too much for me, I'm just gonna like freak out and disappear, because women sometimes, and men especially nowadays, they could come into that one argument, like that first argument in their relationship, and it's like, you know what, this is over. That last scene with Greg and Tony and Lynn kind of reminded me of the end of Kanye's Addiction, and that's all I got.
Cool. Very cool. Nice reference, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, it's my turn. I'm trying to think, what is this episode about? Sex addiction. If anything, this would have been a Maxine-focused episode where maybe, like, Khadijah was doing a profile on a guy dealing with sex addiction, and Maxine realizes she might be a sex addict, and then, you know, kind of that would have been that tie. What do you think this episode would have been like if it would have been Insecure, though?
I think it would have been interesting just because in the past maybe 5 years or so, it's become almost passe for people, particularly if you're any type of celebrity or wealthy, to when you're caught in a scandal, to immediately say you have a sex addiction, whether or not it's something valid. So I think it probably would have been taken from that context or discussion where, you know, is it really sex addiction, or is it a way to try to get absolved from dealing with infidelity or something like that? So maybe they would have played it up with either one of the longstanding couples, or perhaps Tiffany and Derek being a married couple.
So
it would be something that they would use the recent examples of people talking about sex addiction as a way to get that discussion to really understand what it is and how it can be overutilized as almost a crutch.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hello? Okay.
Hello? Okay.
So basically, like, how Kevin Spacey kind of came out and, how he came out, but then also him saying that he suffers from addiction, or he just, like, I think he did that in Harvey Weinstein, just, like, put themselves in these, like, addiction rehab facilities, as if that's going to help with the clout that is now above their careers.
Yeah, and I think more so along the lines of, like, a Tiger Woods as well.
I forgot about that.
Whereas, you know, when he had his scandal, that was really something that he actually, I think, went away to rehab for.
Cool. If this were updated 2017 girlfriends, how do you think it would have gone?
I think they probably would have had some of the same initial assumptions beforehand, as far as maybe be a religious thing or physical. I think they may have played up more, maybe being like maybe an STD almost being the root cause, and then trying to, like, get him to admit it, or maybe stooping through his medicine cabinet kind of thing. Whereas, you know, he just came out and said it. Maybe they followed him to a meeting of some sort, so it's a little more of a standard sitcom shenanigans type of reveal. Or like his sponsor maybe is a woman, which I guess wouldn't make sense, but his sponsor maybe is like has a gender neutral name, like Jamie. And then he keeps texting Jamie about meeting up, and then he's actually meeting up as a sponsor. So something like that.
Pretty good. Good one. Okay.
What say you?
A modern version of this episode. Yvonne would have been posting, like, a bunch of pictures of her and William lately on, say, Snapchat, Facebook, pick your vice. And Maya would have been the one to notice like a print in the photo, and then she would have asked Yvonne next time she saw her, and then Yvonne would have confirmed it, and then that would have started their rumors, and then they would have gone back, like, all the girls, and, like, scrolled through all his, like, older photos trying to see, like, oh my gosh, this was here this whole time, and we never noticed. And then on the flip side, you would have had the whole Sean storyline of being an addict, but would have found out more about, like, how it came out, and more about the wife that he lost or something, because maybe Joan at that point did a Google search or, I don't know, somehow found out about his wife. Or maybe she didn't change her last name or something like that. And then that would have maybe been along the lines of the storyline. But I think the whole, like, having a sponsor with a gender ambiguous name would have been a good angle to go to.
Cool.
Wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
All right, Dan.
Thanks for listening again to another episode of Through Thick and Thin, the Ultimate Girlfriends Podcast.
Much appreciated.
Please remember to follow us, like us, comment, all that stuff. We are on Twitter and Instagram at Thick N, the letter N, Thin Pod. On IG, there is a period between Thin and Pod. And if you want to send us an email on Gmail, thickandthinpod@gmail.com. You can send us your thoughts, questions, anything really that you feel like sending.
Yes, indeed. And also following on Twitter at our personal accounts.
Yes, at Forksetious, you know, learn how to spell it in the liner.
And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Ed B as in Ballin, winning, Ed B winning at Twitter. On Instagram at Ed Call, EDCOFF.
All right. Thanks. And remember to rate or share or whatever. Have a great week. See you next time.
Later.